All right, welcome. It's quarter past, and well, we'll talk more about hypothesis testing and random numbers. Let's start by looking at yesterday's exercise, which was about testing if numbers from two distributions were from the same underlying distribution or not. And actually, when could you detect this? And I hope that you experienced that out of the three, the mean, the chi-square, and the Kolmogorov-Smirnov, that the mean was actually quite good when you just moved the mean between the two. It could detect that fairly easily and fast. But when you change the width or otherwise change the shape, you know, the mean would be completely blind to that, of course. The chi-square is not blind to any of them, but it doesn't react as fast as the Kolmogorov-Smirnov, which gets all the differences. And then you said maybe looking at the distribution of the p-values. Well, if you chose the numbers to be from the same distribution, you should see a uniform distribution. And then some of you might still say, why is it that it's uniform between 0 and 1? And the answer is that it's exactly designed to be that, because it's the essential quantity that makes it useful, that you get values uniformly between 0 and 1, because that's what you would expect. Sometimes you're lucky, sometimes you're unlucky. And if the hypothesis is not correct and you are sensitive to it, well, then you get very low p-values consistently, and they drop fast. So once you go below some small level, you would say, I could have been unlucky, but that's probably not the case here. In the Kolmogorov-Smirnov case, when you only had a few entries, you probably saw that it would also be discrete, simply because, well, you could only have a difference of, say, 7 or 8. There weren't that many options. But once you cranked up the number of numbers in each sample, then suddenly it should get high. It should get continuous. All right. We've uploaded the solutions to week 3. So as always, git pull. And then just as a little intermediate, it's been a while since we've had one of the heroes. So that's why I thought that I'd bring one of them into play. And where do we have? Here we have today's hero. His name is Pierre-Simon de Laplace, and I guess most of you have heard the word Laplace. He is the nearest equivalent of Newton, just French. And he lived after Newton, but he did his work on celestial mechanics. And this is his magnum opus. And he was very, very smart, renowned to be sort of the type that would say, it's easy to see. And Napoleon asked him that he had written this work about the universe, so the solar system was considered the universe at the time, without mentioning its creator. And very well, famously, he answers back, I had no need for that hypothesis in the work. He did the proof of the least square method. He used Bayesian statistics before Bayes. He was the first to lay down principles of probability. And he worked on mostly on the origin and stability of the solar system, but he also worked on sound speeds versus temperature and pressure. And then he was the first to suggest black holes. Yeah, 1799. And then he is, and I quoted him before, the weight of evidence for an extraordinary claim must be proportioned to its strangeness. So that's where you set the cut. Keep that line in mind. All right, and with that, let's go to today's subject, namely random numbers. You all, well, not all, unfortunately, but most of you answered the questionnaire, which I put, and there you were asked to punch in 50 random digits, 0 to 9. And those I've collected and put into a data set. And here I've collected all, except those who were obviously not random. So those I simply cut out. And then your quest is to detect the lack of randomness. And for that reason, I've put six other data sets in. Some are, one is completely random, one is digits of pies, so that's probably random. But then there are other non-random ones that I put in, but they probably don't look like yours. So you have to guess which one is yours and which one are random in general. So, but let's go and see, well, discuss random numbers a little bit. So here we are. And well, where do you get random numbers from? And you follow the advice of John von Neumann, you do not use arithmetical methods for producing them. Because then you get what's called quasi-random. And this was used for quite a while, and a few mistakes were done on this behalf. So, and then you might say, well, here's random and here's just quasi-random. Can't I just use the X values of this, or just make it more dense, you know, finer binning? Well, you still see the patterns in quasi-random compared to random. And I can tell you that there's a whole organization called random.org, which is sort of some of the guardians of random numbers. If you don't use random numbers, you might burn yourself very much. And I had my very first master student, we were in Berkeley working on an experiment, and he ran into a problem with this. So he used the random number generator built into C++ at the time. And he generated, billions of numbers according to a distribution. And then he said, let me subtract the function which I generate them according to. So now you know how to do that. And he did that. And well, when he used the C++ built-in, then he could guess at where the variation should be, because he said, well, the uncertainty here is just the square root of the number. And if you look at the axis here, well, he typically had millions of entries in each bin. So that was an extremely valid approximation. But to his great dismay, it did not all have that difference. It was crazy. And then he said, let me just try another random number generator, the Mersenne Twister, which is a very famous one. And then it came out exactly like he expected. And this was also the first time that I hit the, okay, random numbers are not, well, they have different qualities. We'll get to that. So can't you just yourself invent random numbers? Well, I love the quote from Wikipedia. Most studies find that human subjects have some degree of non-randomness when attempting to produce a random number sequence, for example, digits. I asked the question before I read this, but I think it's really spot on. So this is what we're testing today in the exercise. And yep. It's not easy to get them right. This is so deep into society that even Dilbert touches upon it. And well, six nines in a row, if you have a few thousand numbers as we have in today's data set, would probably represent something you shouldn't see, right? Because you should see six of the same number digits in a row, one in a million. Well, there are 10 different types of digits, so that it was nine is probably not special. So it's 1 in 100,000, you should see it. Well, 1 in 100,000 out of 6,000 digits, that's still, you know, a little on the edge, though not critically so. Are you sure it's random? Well, that's the problem, you can never be sure. Well, that's not true. You can test random numbers. And random.org actually comes with recommendations. So they say a chi-square test and a runs test. And so there's a reason why these are nice to have. And it just says a runs test above and below the median, right? It doesn't have to be digits where you know the distribution, But you can just take whatever numbers you get in, sort them, find the median, and then ask, are they above or below? And then there are more and more involved tests here. For example, the binary rank tests. So what is that? Well, what you do is that you take the 31 leftmost bits of the first 31 random integers. So you need the integers to be long enough that they have 31 bits. And then you make a matrix of these bits. So zeros and ones in a 31 by 31 matrix. And now you determine its rank. Now, the rank can in principle be from 0 to 31, but getting a rank below 28 are rare. And in order for the rank to diminish means that two rows, well, you need to be able to span one row in units of the others. And that rarely happens here, which means you do that, and you do that, you know, for as many as you have. In the case at hand, you know, if you have a million numbers, then you might get, say, 40,000 such random matrices and thus ranks. And you have a count for how many had rank 31, 30, 29, and 28 and below. This should be a small number. But you know the distribution of these four numbers, and hence you can do a chi-square test on that. So that's a binary rank test. Are there others? Yeah, well, there are the so-called die-hard tests. And so here's a whole list of tests where it says, what's the name of the test? What defect does it detect? What property does it have? And yeah, we'll make a discussion of this in a moment. Let me just say why this is some importance. Well, what do you use as random seed? And fortunately, we live in a radio polluted society, meaning that you have randomness in the air. So you can use that. And it's important to do this. Just a little side story here. It turns out that, well, you use random numbers for cryptography. And so one of the random number generators, RNGs, that was used for cryptography was the Joule ECDRBG. And people at the universities pointed out that this was not a very good random number generator. And they actually feared that NSA in the United States had made a backdoor into it. And this was published early. And then it was revealed in the Edward Snowden published papers that yes, exactly this algorithm was bad and exactly NSA had put a backdoor in it so they could break encryption if they had enough data. So it has relevance. And what people point out, let's say you have three random number generators and you don't know if they're all good. Well, if you make a bitwise XOR operation between them, then if just one of them is good, then you're fine, right? You can only increase in randomness. And this is referred to as software whitening. With this in mind, and looking at today's data, well, let me stop sharing on these slides and let's go to today's data. So I'll go here. Here is week 4. And I'm just going to, I called them A, B, C, D, E, F, G, but they are various types. So here's the data. This is what it looks like. And the question is this random or not? And what type of, if it's not random, what types of non-randomness does it contain? So that's the question. Well, the next one looks much alike. It's not the same digits. Starts 6610106. That doesn't look too random. Well, I don't know. I can't remember which one is which. And now you need to find out how they are random or not random. And for that reason, I'd like to start with a short discussion of that. Please speak up. Who has an idea of how to test that? digits between 0 and 9. No, please.
One approach might be that we could spin all this data and see what the distribution is of different digits, different integers. Yes. And presumably we'd see 1 in 10 should go to each number. So comparing the histogram of kind of the binned integers with our data, we could see if one number is overly present or underrepresented.
Yes, I agree very much. Casper had the same idea. And those who don't want to speak up can just write it in the chat. And those who don't really feel like writing it in the chat can write it to one of the TAs or me personally, and then I'll post it. Well, Marta says, I noticed when I was typing in the numbers, I typically type 1 to 5 together and 6 to 0 together. Well, yeah, from the way it's made, which means that perhaps you can test, make a runs test of 1 to 5 versus 6 to 0, right? Do you always type left hand 1 to 5, right hand 6 to 0, left hand, right hand, because then you get more runs than you would expect? Or did you do a lot of left hand and then a lot of right hand to do it? But I agree, the uniform distribution. Now I can put the numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 0. And then you would pass your tests, Casper and Albert. How do you propose to break that one?
You could check how much your runs are kind of cohesive, in the sense that if all your numbers were below the median in the sequence, and all you'd expect, you know, often to go from a number below 5 to number above 5. But if you constantly had runs where you had 5 numbers below 5 and then 5 numbers above, then you could check the length of your runs and do the histogram on that.
Yeah. So the runs test would actually catch that. Now it says check every second digit. Maybe the check every second digit, you know, you can do the runs test with n digits between, which is perhaps not a bad thing to do. For enough data, you should expect runs longer than one of each digit. Yeah, well, how about 2 digits in a row? How often should that happen? Of the same digits. Sorry, 2 same digits in a row. Do you all agree that the chance of that? Yeah, exactly. 1/10. So how about counting those? And how about 3 in a row, 4 in a row, 5 in a row? And at some point, if there are 6,000 something digits in this, at some point you will run out, and you should expect those numbers to be Poisson distributed, right? Because having 3 in a row is 1 in 100, and you have 6,000 chances. N is large, P is small, it's Poisson. Yep. And then Emily suggests check patterns to check if distributions of most probable next digit is also uniform. Yeah, here, and before we go into breakout rooms, I would like you to discuss this in small groups. And Anna says 3 in a row is 1 in 1,000. Yeah, sure, Anna, if you say 3 9s, but remember you have 3 0s, 1, 2, and all the way to 9. So it's only of a specific digit that it's 1 in 1,000. So, all right, now we get as many things in as, well, I can see things pouring in. So that's why I'm creating, we don't want groups to be that small. Please discuss this for 5 minutes, and at 13:40 towards there, we will return, and I would like more suggestions. And meanwhile, there's a fearsome revelation at who were not by their screen. Careful. All right. If people are back, then yeah, I would say Asker had an interesting idea. He said, feed all the data to a machine learning algorithm and see if it can predict the next number. Well, most likely it can't predict the next number, but if it can do so with better than 1 in 10, then that would be enough. But the length here is 6,000 digits. And I don't think that's enough for good training. There's a suggestion, compare the likelihood of the numbers. I guess that's the 1 in 10 histogram or 0 to 10 histogram with 10 bins, right?
Our group also had an idea, which,
please?
Which was to have some... some Poisson distributed to make some model where it would have a Poisson distribution of the numbers and then compare it to a completely random model using a chi-square fit. So if you have some distribution, compare it to the Poisson and then using chi-square, see if they fit together.
So now you're saying some distribution, what?
All right, so you have some, so to test if some random amount of numbers or some randomly generated numbers in some interval are truly random, trying to fit them with a Poisson distribution and then compare it with a chi-square.
Yeah, yeah, but what's on the x-axis in the Poisson distribution?
Well, then you would have the value of the numbers, and then on the y you would have the amount of them.
Yeah, on the y the amount of them, but here you have digits 0 to 9, and so we agreed that should be a flat histogram.
Yeah, okay.
But I think you're not far. Imagine that you say, well, let's make a two-dimensional histogram where we have one number on the y on one axis and then the next number on the second axis. Now there are 100 entries, and again, you should have 60 in each, and you can fit it with a flat distribution. But you could also say, let me take for each of the 100 numbers, take and plot it in a histogram. And now it should be Poisson distributed, right? With lambda equals the total number of entries divided by 100.
Okay.
Do that with 1,000, you know, a three-dimensional and a four-dimensional. Yep. All right. There are many other. There are shifted numbers in the sequence by one step and plot the shifted number sequence versus the original one. Yeah. All right. Well, you all have the chat, and I'm going to leave this channel open. And well, that is today's exercise, to try to put some of these tests into play and see if you can make them work. Before you do so, and Lasse says, is there an approach that considers entropy or information in the data? Yes, Lasse, there is. I'm not going to get into them here, but there are. In the remainder of the time, I'm going to go through the table measurement. And well, here is my analysis of the table measurements. And it's done on the data, which is from 2018. And that is simply because the number of results that comes out, I hope to show you, is actually reasonably large. So let's start by my analysis. Well, you've seen this. You've seen that, hey, things come out in a funky way, and there are clearly measurements that were wrong. So I start by just counting how many valid measurements do I have. And it's roughly 500. There are two persons who measured with the 30 centimeter, but never by the 2 meter ruler. And one would expect to miss or put an extra 30 centimeters on with 30 centimeter ruler. And one would even expect people to do it with a 2 meter folding rule. But to get 2 meters off with a 30 centimeter ruler, I have no clue how that happened. But I assure you, we very, very, very meticulously wrote in this to the data. So what you would do if you were just naive would be to just say, look, I'm going to take the mean of all of this, and that should be fine. And I can get the standard deviation, the root mean square, and I can get divide that by square root n, and all should be good. Here's the naive result. The mean comes out to be 3.3 meters, and the root mean square error, which I sometimes call root mean square because we do that in my field, is 22 centimeters. That's not very accurate. For 2 meters, you get roughly the same result, but the root mean square is 25 centimeters. What? Is that the typical mistake one makes? And so I divide by square root n, and then I get about plus minus 1 centimeter on the final result. 1 centimeter. It sounds like it was a bit of a waste having 500 people measured. But at least they agree, right? If you look at the difference between the two, the difference is about, well, 3 centimeters. Whoa, I actually don't get that. Should be 7 millimeters. I haven't updated that number, but that's well within the uncertainty here. Okay, now one starts looking at it and says, okay, well, at least I can see what went wrong here. Should I try to correct it or should I just throw it out? You know, well, it'd be unreasonable to filter out the drunk data, I'm asked. No, it's not at all. So let's start looking at that. First of all, do I want to correct this because I believe I know what went wrong, or should I, exclude it? Same here. Well, I actually tried to look at the width of the peak when I shifted it in, it actually got wider. So the measurements outside were also not as accurate. It remained the same here, but these were had a hard time changing it. In retrospect, I think one shouldn't include them. One should simply reject them. Also remember, the precision of the result goes down with square root of n. So losing some measurements, if it is justified, is not too bad. Anyway, in my naive approach, I said, let's keep them. And then I took a close look at what the distribution looked like. And here, I've been very, very careful about how I binned my data. Because I binned it such that it hit the unit sort of values, and I binned it such that it was half a centimeter here. And the advantage of that is that all the people who rounded, shame on them, but that happens, it doesn't ruin the distribution here. For the in the case with the 2 meter folding rule, you need a better binning because it's too wide. And here it's clearly, you see the binning effect here and that's life. And then you see that the typical uncertainty with the good measurements were about plus minus 1 centimeter, 10 millimeters. Whereas for the 2 meter folding rule, it was 5 millimeters. So in the answer, with which is better? Well, the 2 meter folding rule is better, and it's better by a factor 2. It's twice as precise. Also notice the chi-square value here is reasonable. Well, 2.4, the p-value is 2.4%. But we know there are effects, things outside. It shouldn't be Gaussian. There are other effects like rounding, which ruins it. But you get the idea. Now, answering Norman, I would say, if I was rough, I said there are 500 measurements, and so the chance of being outside 3 sigma, well, I should expect some outside 3 sigma, but I shouldn't expect things outside 4 sigma. So if I was a brutal person, I would simply say, I will consider this the typical precision, and I'll cut away anything outside 4 sigma. Away. And that's, of course, a tighter cut here. And that's the brutal way of doing it. Marcus is asking, do I know when we're looking at precise measurements? No, I'll get to that. So far, we're doing the analysis without considering uncertainties at all. Now, how would I do this more regularly? And remember, Barlow says every data point needs a fair hearing. I would use Chauvinist criterion, which says you have some peak and then you have tails. And then you would say, I'm going to reject data that has a low probability. And what is that probability? Well, you should expect things being 3 sigma away if you have a lot of measurements. So then you can't just say at 3 sigma, I throw away things. Marcus, I'll return to your point. Don't worry. And if the furthermost point, so you You say, what is the mean and what is the standard deviation? And the furthest most point, let's say it's 5 sigma away, then it would be about 1 in 1,000,000 you should expect, but you have 500 measurements. Okay, it's 1 in 2,000. It's still below per mil that you should have such a measurement naturally. That is a fair hearing and you're out. I chose 5% as my cutoff. And then what I did, and I think is healthy, is that I printed the fair hearing of all. So I said, what is the furthest measurement away? Well, it's measurement number 304. It measured the length at 1 meter, 0.275. That's 2 meters away. That is almost 11 sigma away because the mean is this and the standard deviation is this. What is the probability of that point? Well, zero. What is the probability when I multiply by 500, you know, to see that point in all the data? Still zero. Is that greater than 5? No, it isn't. You're rejected. Recalculate mean and standard deviation as the next furthest point. It's 12 sigma away, 14 sigma away. Now the standard deviation shrinks because we got rid of the 3 measurements, which are 2 meters off. Somebody got 4 meters and 26 centimeters. Well, we still reject. We reject. But at some point, we get to a measurement which is 7.2 centimeters away. It's 3.66 sigma away, which corresponds to, you know, 1 in 10,000, a little more. But we still have 400 something measurements. And so the probability of seeing that given many measurements is 5.4%. Accepted. Stopped rejecting points. And doing this, I think, and actually, you know, printing out like this into a file that you save is a very, very healthy and good way of seeing what data did I actually reject? And did it get a fair hearing? And here, I think they all got a fair hearing. Satisfying Barlow, we go to the results. And now the standard deviation is 2 centimeters, right? It was about a little above 1 centimeter for the good measurements, but we still have some on the side. We retain most, we threw away some 40 measurements, and now the uncertainty is below 1 millimeter. And no, if you have tons of data, you can't expect it, inspect it like that. But let's say you get a data file with 100,000 entries you throw out. Well, how about looking at least at the beginning and the end of that data file, like the above one, and just, you know, having a look. Also, what is the distribution of those you threw away? We're down to 1 millimeter precision with a 30 centimeter ruler. And for the 2 meter folding rule, now the standard deviation is 0.5 centimeter. And the overall is 0.25 millimeter. And now comes the crucial test. Do they agree? Well, the difference is about 1 millimeter and the uncertainty in quadrature is this, which means we're 1.35 sigma away from each other. All right, they still agree. Cool. Now we go to consider the pull plot. Now we want to include the uncertainties because, hey, isn't that, reasonable? I'll return to all the questions in a moment. We'll take them. The pull is to plot, well, we know the mean now, we at least have a good estimate. I know it's an average of the x's, but you know the uncertainty on that is small. So now we take the individual measurements and we ask, what is your value compared to the mean in units of your individual uncertainty? Notice the I. Then let's plot that. Of course, some should be above, some should be below. So it should be a unit distribution, unit Gaussian distribution around zero. I've drawn that in red here. And frankly, just look here at the sigmas, the standard deviations. Your intuition about the uncertainties is not too bad, right? When the standard deviation of this is this value, you're doing good, right? That's what you should expect. But if you look at it, it's not entirely Gaussian, right? Some overshot their uncertainty, and a lot of people put too large an uncertainty. Some put too small. They will end out in the tails here. And some put a large uncertainty, larger than they needed, and they'll end up in the core. So I fitted it with two Gaussians, and you clearly see the two components. So the uncertainties are not perfect, but at least they're reasonable. And this time, I reject those who are, say, 10 sigma away, right? If you're away by 10 sigma from the mean, then probably either your measurement or your uncertainty is not good. And then I don't want you in a weighted average. So here are those thrown away again. Again, you can expect them all. And what? Well, somebody measured, that looks like a reasonable value, but they put 8 millimeter uncertainty, and that's 13 sigma away, you're out. Same for the 2 meter. And just look at one. Here's one that's a super accurate measurement, but the person quoted 0.3 millimeter on the measurement, and that just puts it 12 sigma away, and that's not good enough. You're rejected, you're out. Now taking a weighted average, well, we get a value, a central value. We get a standard deviation, which is undefined, because remember, when you have measurements which have individual uncertainties, then suddenly you can't define the uncertainty, the average uncertainty. You could, of course, throw away the error and then put it, but I decided not to put it. And then you have the uncertainty on the mean given here. And suddenly we're not at the 1 millimeter. We're at a third of a millimeter precision with the 30 centimeter ruler. And with the 2 meter folding rule, we're down to a hair's width. So 1.5 of a tenth of a millimeter. And we compare the two again. And again, the two agree very, very well. And this time, well, the first time we just excluded the bad measurements. We improved by a factor 20 or something, right? Which, you know, 20 or 40, which means that if you wanted the same precision with a bad analysis, you would have to have the entire Copenhagen population in and measure the dam table. And now we improved again by, you know, a factor 2 to 3 by including your uncertainties, because suddenly we're able to sort of rank who did a precise measurement and who didn't. And furthermore, we can do a chi-square. And frankly, since we rejected the very best measurements, the chi-square should come out reasonably well. And it does. And now you think everything is in place, but there is a comparison I haven't done, which is comparing the unweighted to the weighted measurement. Let's do that. Oh, it turns out that the difference for the 30 centimeter ruler is significant. It's even more significant for the 2 meter folding rule. It's just, you know, it's at the 2.5 to 3 sigma effect, but it's still not good, right? And just to answer a question, why isn't there an RMSE value here? Why is there no standard deviation? Well, I haven't put it because a standard deviation would imply that that's the typical uncertainty on a single measurement. You could put it in, and I suspect that it would be large, because those who put 3 meters plus minus half a meter will contribute very much to the RMS, and they're not sorted out because the pull is good. So that's why I haven't put it. Perhaps you're right. Undefined is a strong term. You could just take the values and throw away the uncertainties. So it could be put in parentheses. Back to the problem. The central value shifts whether we take errors into account or not. And what's the problem? Well, it turns out that those who measure a bit longer, they tend to have smaller errors. There is a correlation between the value and the uncertainty. How? Why? Well, I don't know. It's just what the data shows. And then you think, well, that's the way to do it. Well, you can also fit for the problem. And I know I'm going above time, but let me just show you how one would do it. So there are many challenges because people have different resolutions and there are several peaks and some things around it, but let's try anyway. So first here, the 30 centimeter ruler, I simply fit it, and I only fitted it in a very narrow range because, well, that's a simple Gaussian fit. And then you can see that it's, well, it's not that good of a probability. So how can you improve that? Well, we could do a double Gaussian fit because there are some who are precise and some who are less precise. And well, it improves things. And not only does it improve the, it also improves the uncertainty on the mean, which goes from half a millimeter to, well, 0.6 to 0.4 millimeters. And I'm putting two digits in simply because I want to show you the, you know, how much you reduce things. There'll be more of that. And you might say, well, you shouldn't put two digits. I wouldn't in the final result when publishing. Then I tried to fit, well, a double Gaussian, but three of them, because now I want to fit, I don't want to throw away data, so I also have the plus minus peaks in. What does that do? Well, now it goes back, you know, to half a millimeter, so it increases the error. And the reason why is because the second peak tries to sort of get whatever is in here into account. And by the way, I should say, I switched, of course, to an unbinned likelihood fit here because otherwise there wouldn't be at all enough statistics in these bins. Okay, so that's not enough. Now I try a triple Gaussians and three of them. And then you might say, okay, that's a lot of parameters. Yes, but I keep the same shape of this peak as this peak. This is my control. This is what the distribution should be like. And I assume it's the same for these two peaks, but I don't assume the same height for these two peaks. You can see a clear difference. It's much easier to measure one lower than higher. And now the two Gaussians will fit the core and the last Gaussian will take care of the tails in it. And the uncertainty goes back down to 0.42, which is not exactly what we had before, but not, you know, too bad. So here could be the sort of fitted result. Here was the weighted average result, and here was the fitted result. Notice in the fitted result, I haven't thrown away any data. So, and the two agree, one is slightly more precise, but I also threw away data. And just finally, I want to show you, you know, how much data do people tend to throw away? And here I just did an analysis. I said, how much would I throw away? And some people threw very little away and some threw a lot away. I was on the throwing quite a bit away side. So once you start arguing well for throwing away data, A, keep an original record, and B, consider what you throw away. But otherwise, cleaning is not unhealthy. Also, what results did you get? And in fact, here's the result I got. But look at what people got in results. There's actually quite some variation in the results that people got, even with the same data. And even with the same means and background and so on, people simply tend to do data analysis differently. And that's the message of this, namely that even the same data does not yield the same results. Fortunately, they're relatively close to each other, but yeah, there are choices to be made. It's an iterative process. And if you think that the central values are different, then take a look at the uncertainties. People got uncertainties of, well, you know, 3 centimeters. That's of course, if you don't clean anything. But I mean, even there are hardly any who got the same uncertainty for this. So there's almost a factor 100 between these results. And I predict that in your project results, there is also going to be a large variety in the uncertainties you get. So just take a look at the uncertainties and ask yourself, is this reasonable? You know, am I getting a large error from something where one value is off and the root mean square error explodes? And you know, have you checked for that? Here are some conclusions. I won't jump into those. I will simply say, I hope this is, well, illuminating and stopping sharing. I would say, go through and think about how you did that analysis and don't hesitate, and also take a few of the lines of thinking into your project. And finally, regarding project today, from 4 to 5, I'll be on this channel answering questions. Well, we will be on this and the exercise channel answering questions about the projects, if you want. But let's start with the exercise on the random digits. And Peter asks if discarding data assumes that it follows a normal distribution, but in reality, that's not necessarily right. And yes, Peter, that's a very, very good comment. I made that assumption. I snuck it in. Nobody complained until you did now. And this is a way that, you know, if you're not looking with sharp eyes at the assumptions people put in, they can get away with a lot of things. But I think being honest about the assumptions and keeping a record of the data you threw away, and for example, showing a distribution of it, is a healthy way of doing it. All right. And then David also commented about Chauvinist criterion. So it's applied to one point at a time, but you can, of course, reject multiple points for each iteration. And no, I didn't choose 3 to 4 probably sigma to reject data. Well, the reason is that lying outside 4 sigma is about 1 in 10,000 points that would do that. And we don't have nowhere near 10,000 points. So if you're outside 4 sigma, you're unlikely. It's a dirty way of applying Chauvinist criterion in just one go. All right. And then you, I'm asked, so how can you be objective when peer reviewing others' work? Well, you can ask them what they did. And you yourself can avoid that question by being open about it. And what you mean is if people do different statistical analysis. Well, that is why you should write exactly what you do. Exactly what you do, because then it is reproducible by others. And often you should just accept that maybe you don't get exactly the same result, but if the results overlap with uncertainty and you also have similar uncertainties, then probably many of the things you did were right. But the more complex it becomes, the harder it becomes to get the same value. It's only simple questions that have one simple answer. All right, I hope that was giving a view into real data analysis and dirty numbers. Again, stretch your legs, relax, take a cup of tea, and then let's attack the exercise and see who can find what they think are your data. Don't write it in the chats, at least only write it to me directly. But otherwise, I will go through it on Friday and post the solution. See you around for the exercise, but take a break first.